You're listening to A Stranger Podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, this is Jen Graves. You're listening to Invisible, Stranger's weekly conversation with people in art. We are here today in a windowless room in the basement of the Portland Art Museum. Hi, everybody.
Good morning.
See, it's a big group. So we're here on the occasion of the Contemporary Northwest Art Awards. This is the first year of the awards. And the recipients are Jeffrey Mitchell, Wedding Tennis, Dana To. Am I pronouncing you correctly?
Yeah, that's one correct pronunciation.
What's the other?
Atto. Okay. Also
Marie Wan and Kat Clifford. And the show just opened last night, and it includes. It'll be up through when, Jennifer?
September 14th.
Okay, it'll be up through September 14th. And I didn't really need to repeat that because you'd already said it. But Jennifer Gately is the curator and also here. I guess I wanted to throw the first question to you, Jennifer. This is the first year of doing these awards.
Yes.
And I can imagine it wasn't the easiest thing to do politically, changing from an Oregon biennial to a broader Northwest project. So I just guess I want to hear kind of what you think came out of it most productively.
Well, it's just the beginning of a long history. The museum has a deep history of presenting the art of the region in various contexts. And so once upon a time, it was an annual open to all that evolved into an Oregon biennial that was juried. So this is yet another evolution of this activity. And in this iteration, it dovetails more into the larger mission of the museum to present Northwest art as a whole. And the museum defines Northwest art as art being made in and about a five-state region, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, this awards exhibition is constructed in a way that allows for that five-state region to have a voice, as opposed to the Oregon Biennial, which simply focused on Oregon. And it was an amazing exhibition that was very well loved, and also an exhibition that was hated by many. People love to hate to love it. And I'm sure the same will be said for this, but I feel as a construct, it will better serve the artists of the region long term, much like the CICO Awards in San Francisco has done for the Bay Area artists whose careers have gone on beyond Bay Area in San Francisco.
So. And the process you went through was a combination between nomination and curating, sort of a curatorial team coming together and making decisions at the end. And so it's a
many
process
voices.
That, yeah.
So it reached into the community. We
250 nominators?
Well, five states, you have to remember.
Yeah.
And it was a wide cross-section of nominators, curators, academics, gallerists, collectors, dealers, critics. Jen Graves was a nominator. and so it really reached into the community and solicited a community voice, which I think is a really instrumental part to setting the foundation for this long term. From there, those nominees were then reviewed by myself and James Rondeau, the curator of contemporary art, and chair of the art department, contemporary art department at the Art Institute in Chicago. We narrowed that down to a list of 28 individuals. I then subsequently went and did studio visits with those 28 fine and remarkable artists and selected these five to be presented in this first Contemporary Northwest Art Awards exhibition. They all receive an award, a solo exhibition within the museum's special exhibition galleries, pages in the catalog, modest honorarium, and the opportunity to be given the Arlene Schmidt Prize, which was awarded last night to our Wedding Tennis. Congratulations.
Wedding, I remember I talked to you maybe a year ago, and you said, or maybe 6 months ago, and it was like this really casual conversation where I think we were passing in a place, like a party or a restaurant or something, and you said, yeah, I just don't know about this, getting this attention, because it makes me feel like it's going to just, I've been on the bottom, and now being on the top, then I'm going to be on the bottom again.
I don't know. I have some mixed feelings. I think most of us probably have the same feeling. It's an ambivalence.
Yeah.
It's impossible to really reconcile, because, of course, everyone wants support and love and money. But at the same time, it's like you want to share it and you want to be part of a, it's all, we're all in it for each other. And I mean, I've seen so many art shows in my life where, you know, I don't even know the person. And I just, it's this beautiful thing. And you, the whole idea of like selecting something that's best, I think is, it's, as I said last night, I think it's kind of absurd. But at the same time, it's when you're part of it, you go, I could use it. I mean, I'm behind in whatever. I just want to, I don't want to go on about it, but I think I definitely have mixed feelings about it. And I would assume that most people do.
Yeah. Just to clarify for our listening audience, the Arlene Schnitzer Prize is a monetary prize in the amount of $10,000, which makes a significant impact on any artist's lives, that amount of money. And so that's the intention behind the award, to really provide some financial support, in addition to the overall goal of the program to provide professional recognition and support for the artists here mm-hmm. in the Northwest.
One of the things I'd really like to hear you guys talk about is how you think your works look with each other and how they relate to each other. You know how there are different strains that come out because of a Cat Clifford being near a Marie Watt, you know, and because of, I mean, the juxtaposition of your work, Dan, with Whiting's work, you know, kind of seeing them through the two rooms that face each other. And then, I mean, what are some of your impressions about how your work looks with your work? I mean, with all of you in there. It's a series of solo shows, but it's also a group show. And it's a group show presumably intended to reflect something about the Northwest.
Can I make a correction there? it might do that. It was not intended to do that.
To do what?
It was not curated to reflect a certain voice or vision. Each artist was selected individually on their own merit.
No,
and,
sure, right.
And so I just want to be clear about that.
In other words, you didn't choose the group in order to, like, create some kind of portrait of the Northwest.
Right.
Advertise for departmental tourism.
Advertise for tourism, yeah. an art show is always a good way to do that. The point still stands.
I think it actually it seemed to just, maybe accidentally, just really, it's insanely diverse. I mean, I walked through, and I went, you know, I went into Dan's show, and going into his, and then coming back into my room, and I just thought, this is a weird barrier that you go through, and I was kind of jealous of his room, and looking at it, just working, I thought, my word, I'm just a big square, and then I go to Kat's room, I just saw the work, and I just thought, it was sort of, again, kind of nonsensical to compare it, or to evaluate which ones, but I think maybe it does reflect something, because it's so incredibly diverse.
I was thinking about this last night, there's painting, sculpture, installation, video, photography, drawing, am I missing anything?
Community, social practice.
Ceramics.
Yeah,
and then
social practice. Ceramics. That's it, right? But that's a lot. It's pretty huge.
Neon.
I forgot to say neon. I mean, I'd like to hear you guys talk about each other's work a little, because I always think it's interesting to hear artists talk about other artists. Jeffrey, I'm going to ask you first, because I know you're more intrepid in that topic.
I was so surprised. You know, you imagine what this event will be like, and I've seen everyone's work. Dan's work I hadn't seen in person before. And when I came, it blew my mind, like, whoa. That, first of all, everyone had made this real ambitious effort, but that there was some kind of shared, not a look, but feeling, motivation. That's all I have to say right now. I was very, very happy and really pleased to be adjacent to everyone's work. And funny things, I mean, all the issues, all the thoughts that I had in making my project, I found going on in everyone else's work. You know, I thought about, since we're men, Dan and Whiting's work, and did you call it masculine anxiety, or did I?
think I might have said that.
And I was like, yeah, I get that. I don't know. I was really impressed.
I didn't know.
I wrote it somewhere.
Sure, I have that.
I'm sure.
I like the storytelling aspect in everybody's work. Like I connected with Whiting's big painting that's sort of a reflection of somebody's backyard in his neighborhood, and Dan's painting of his dad, you know, and then the notes on the side of the drawing notes on the side of the painting about his dad dressing up as Smokey the Bear, and then you know, I guess I could just go on, but I just feel like everybody, you know, actually this is the first time I've met Jeffrey, and that's the other thing that's so great about this show, is just actually coming together with everybody and feeling like it's a show of artists, I think. And I don't know that when you curate something, you don't automatically get that, even if it is a museum. I don't think that that's guaranteed. So it's really a pleasure to be with so many interesting people who are interested in telling. For me, there are people who are interested in telling stories, and I see that in your work, Jeffrey, and also in your work, Kat. And so I felt so honored to be just amidst like such incredibly rich work.
That was definitely one of the threads that I discovered after the fact, when I really started to delve into your work, that narrative impulse that you all have in very unique ways was really quite unique. In addition to being inspired by place in so many ways, and living here in the Northwest, and then the beauty of the landscape and our surroundings that you can see in Dan's paintings and in Kat's paintings, and even in Whiting's at work, and the way it's inspired by his adventures near Twisp in eastern Washington. There are multiple threads, and that narrative impulse is certainly a strong one.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit of freedom and liberty going around in everyone's work. It seems to tie it, like this voice that's sort of unchecked, like just talking freely without reservations or without some like art cool or a sense of what it should be. It seems like liberty to me, which is super.
I mean,
that's
that
great.
And moving between mediums too. You know that none of us, we're not just a painter, and that we do feel that freedom to whatever it is that we want to say, to find the right medium to say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a really personal voice for you, and I think maybe a bit more political or social messages, and just everything in between. You know, it's really, and there's private and public, and I didn't feel that sense of where they frame it. I just go into shows, and there's often a framed sense of this is speaking about art or speaking about a certain kind of art or a generation or a mode, and this is sort of like open, and that's really, I think it's great. That's
one of the elements that I find so compelling about being here in the Northwest is this sense of freedom that many of the artists revel in, because they are, there's no expectation. It's anything goes, and anything is possible, and certainly that we've seen in Jeffrey's work, where he so freely bounces between craft and fine art and high and low and kitsch, and doesn't necessarily play to expectations.
There, you guys all made new work, which was super exciting to me coming into the show, because I really, I have seen all of your work before in person, and so I really wanted to see new work, and I was just really, there is a lot to see here for even for people who know these artists already, I will say. I mean, there really is. It's really a good show. Yeah.
Dan said it's like being in a forest. And you can wander and
really
you can look
good.
At this.
And there's a ton of landscape.
And you can get lost, and then find your way again. But that's really true. There's a lot to look
there's
at.
There's a lot to
that's
look at.
That's really compelling.
Kat, you made a ton of new work. Am I crazy? Or did you make that?
Yeah, I did. Well, yeah, I kind of get compulsive, obsessive, and go through these periods where I just work like a crazy person and neglect my family. But Yeah, yeah, I did. You know, well, for me, this is my biggest show to date, and it seemed like, I mean, you know, Whiting and Jeffrey have kind of been, you know, I mean, I feel like I'm kind of the most emerging, and in Seattle, they're, you know, these guys that I kind of look up to, and so I felt like I really needed to step it up, and yeah, so.
Remember when I was walking down the street with you that night, and you were like
yeah,
halfway into
out.
It? You had your helmet on, like, oh my god.
Yeah, I like attacked him in the middle of the street, whining. I'm freaking out.
You were
I don't
trying
know
to figure out ways
yeah.
to feel normal
yeah.
under the deadline.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you made everything from sculpture to video
yeah.
to like. Animation work. I mean,
yeah.
it's like an installation with the you know moving video animation.
Yeah, well, I just had these ideas in my head, and I'm bummed that we didn't have more time to you know mm-hmm.
yeah.
if it would be great to have a year to
yes.
you know
yeah.
to really work on it. But yeah, I just had all of these ideas and just kind of ran with them, and I had starts. On them in my studio kind of before that they were ideas that I hadn't quite developed. But then, you know, Jennifer told me to just go for it. And I think that was the other great thing about this show is that, like, I kind of felt like I had freedom to just go for it. And if I failed, it wasn't going to be the worst thing. I just felt like I just needed to, I don't know. Just working with you, and you, or I mean, I emailed you a lot, and we had a lot of conversations, and I just felt like a lot of support from you, and yeah.
Marie yeah. also created all new work, more
yes.
or less.
Me
too.
Yeah.
Very ambitious
yeah.
pieces that took a great deal of time.
These really yeah. large pieces.
I know. I was like you. I'm still recovering. I'm like.
Can you talk about the piece in the round?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where did that come from?
Well, it's called Forget Me Not, Mothers and Sons, and I it's really kind of come out of my use of blankets over time, and I'm just interested in how we're received in the blanket and in a way we depart this world in a blanket. And I'm also interested in heirlooms right now, and I, like Kat, have a child, or she's got children, but I am interested in what we pass down to our kids and the idea that we receive what our place now has to do with seven generations mm-hmm. back, and then our decisions that we do move forward with affects seven generations out. And the people, though, as a mom, I felt for these young lives that have been lost in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so the men or the son, it's the sons are the men and women who've died in Iraq and Afghanistan from Oregon and Vancouver, Washington. And the mothers were selected or contributed by men that I know, and I asked them if they would select one woman that they wanted to have remembered in a cameo, and a person who's no longer living, but and it could be a familial or historical value or a mentor person. So that's what the piece is sort of about.
And those people range from like T. Corinne to Mama Jean.
Yeah, it's a
really,
huge range
yeah.
of people.
Were you motivated in part by not being able to find a list of, didn't I read those?
Yeah, that there was really hard to, well, I wanted to learn more about who the people were. So I like self-published a paper document that tells the story a little bit about each person. And I think that part of it was just trying to get to know who these people were. And also, I just think that we live in an age of celebrity right now mm-hmm. where, you know, it's so easy to know about these famous people's lives who have no connection to our lives
mm-hmm.
and to actually just learn about these people who we're all connected. That's the idea. And, you know, so, and that kind of explains why there's that sort of webbing
mm-hmm.
or lattice fence.
It's a very large fence that you sort of walk into. We should just describe and has all these. Is it cameos made of blankets?
Yeah, they're all it's wool blankets and it's satin binding from the blankets
mm-hmm.
that are around the cameos.
Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Hi.
Okay.
I've never seen this much of your work before, and it's really exciting to see it. I had no idea you worked in neon. So
yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
And I'm really curious about your kind of where your work comes out of, because it has this these paintings which are, well, maybe you should describe them, but basically they're these sort of scenes that have scenes within them, and also text, and the text can be kind of, it's kind of deathly and also kind of throwing around cliches, and also this like strains of porn and strains of like rural. I don't know.
No, it's kind of a long explanation, so I'll try to condense it. But initially, it was part of a project. I was a psych major in Madison, Wisconsin. When I decided to quit doing that, I did a painting a day, and it was sort of this. This way of charting my own development somehow, and not necessarily paying attention to art history at first. I just wanted to know what I was interested in, and this was the straightest path that I could do that with. And that's part of the reason that I still do drawing every day. Was that immediacy increases the sensitivity for me, so that if I'm feeling one way one day, I might feel a different way tomorrow, or something strange might have happened politically or personally that might affect me. So that kind of allows for all those changes that you see. As far as the recurrence of porn and landscape, which are two big things in my work, I just tend to, I mean, that's, naked women fascinate me, and so it's like the landscape.
I'm sorry, I thought you said naked women fascinate me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I just said it's something in my nature. So.
Where do you live?
That's why I'm jealous of his work. I need more naked women in my work. Starting now.
All right, well, keep an eye out for that. Where do you live?
Washougal, right across the river.
Okay,
so it's just 20 minutes up the gorge.
Yeah, okay. I have a little cabin on the Washougal River right now.
Looks like a scene just from his paintings.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I draw
there's naked women running around the forest.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's where that comes from. But I just wanted to say, because it kind of spun around real quick before we changed gears, I feel like there's a real genuineness in everyone's work who's here. And maybe it comes from the freedom, but people, rather than choosing to be aloof in this group, have chosen to be connected to the materials, to their culture, to themselves. And I'm really happy to be hanging out with these people. And Michelle.
It's like the group hug.
That has been a spectacular part that I didn't imagine. Is once I got here, that feeling of mutual respect and interest and authentic expression.
That was something that drew me to all of you.
I was actually
personally
looking forward to that. I can remember looking forward to that, knowing,
really?
Looking at the list and going, I'm gonna meet all these people up close, hang out, drink beer with them, look and understand the work on a new level. And I was eager, and because I don't think I get enough of it, maybe, but I just went, this is going to be good.
And that's the beauty of this program in general, is this opportunity for audiences to not necessarily sit down and drink beer with you, but to get to see your work in greater depth in a way they might not otherwise be able to on any given day.
Yeah, it does physically make more room, because I've not shown in a space that's that square before. Most of the spaces I've shown in are longer than they are wide. And I was thinking about Kat's work especially. Billy Howard's gallery is a long, narrow hall.
Yeah.
And there was something about just opening up and having space in the center of the room to put something in that allowed for something else to pop out. or something different or new or freshly interesting.
The sculptures, right?
Hey,
who knows? She's not just working with walls.
Active sculptures.
But that's reflected in the kind of openness I felt, like just energy-wise, with everyone too. A real openness, not.
I think it's nice in a way. It's almost strange how it is a museum show. I was thinking about it because I ended up getting more. There was more. Jennifer and I were trying to squeeze all this stuff into my room, and I was like, this is too much. And if you were doing a gallery show, there's that, you have to have that sophisticated edge, and you're talking to the curators and to the critics, and you're going, we're cool enough to have this spare, and that's who you're talking to. But this is a museum, and you're thinking about the public and kids, and you just jam all this stuff in there, and I just thought, well, it's nice to have the volume and not worry about necessarily the sophistication or the tone. You know,
yeah, it's usually the other way around.
Interesting,
but
yeah, for you,
is it? All new work.
All new work in this. Three new pieces. A sphinx?
Mm-hmm.
This very large, throne-like sphinx with fabric and then this insane backside.
Yeah. You know, making this work, for me, is its own reward. Like, I connected to clay sometimes as a chore. Process-wise, you know, it's heavy, you gotta heave it, hoe it, and you gotta babysit it through these different stages of, you know, maturation or development, and finally get a finished thing. That's pretty. It's a miraculous material, but it can be a real drag. Or I've had the experience of being a slave to it, and resenting it. And this time, I found the joy in it again, and it was. I was like, "Yeah, let's make more."
And yet, for the first time, you made skulls.
For the first time in my life.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I shoot it because I'm. You know, I never wear black. I'm by choice, sort of happy, in tone, mm-hmm. and. But it's I was telling Dan, it's not a goth skull. It's a.
They're all white.
There's a Dia de los Muertos skull. And, you know, my dad died 2 years ago. And that, I think, is it. A connection. When people leave you that are close, my experience is there's always some gift, some silver lining. There's the loss, but there's the love, you know. And, well, I really felt it in a big way, and I was like, yeah, well. And I just turned 50 on Tuesday.
What?
So I'm heading towards the the exit. not anytime soon, I hope. But, you know, you do feel your mortality at 50. I'd never noticed birthday before, but, you know, especially when a parent dies, you're next in line. You get that whole thing. So,
we're on tape, remember?
Anyway, skulls, man, once you start, they're easy and fun. Like, everyone gets it. Everyone gets it, you know, and in their own way, whatever it is.
Skulls and naked women.
Cycle of life.
Yes.
A relevant topic here. Certainly Marie's work.
And
Jeffrey's work.
And the debris in your work that mm-hmm. finds a new life mm-hmm. in the assemblages and in the paintings too, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I really identify with is, you know, stuff. That I'm taking debris too. And
mm-hmm. I remember when I first saw your stuff at Billy's and I hadn't seen it. I walked in and saw the cabin thing and you were wandering around, going in and out of the building and walking around the grass and logs and stuff. I was like, wait a minute. It was really intriguing to me.
It's a similar landscape.
I'm still not. Yeah, I don't. I want to find out more because it's definitely. I was watching your videos last night, the first time all the way through. Mm-hmm. And it's mysterious to me. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. But it is. And also, like the blue tarps, you know, there's something about like your work that's just quintessential Northwest to me. And it's this landscape that is so familiar to me that I really, you know, so many people drive by, and you have it too in your work, you know, so many people don't acknowledge or don't see that beauty in it. And
well, I was actually went through Dan's show without, you know, my eyes are, you know, maybe the second oldest in this group. But my eyes are, I have to wear glasses when I read now. I went through Dan's show before, and I came up with my glasses afterwards, and I was looking, and I saw the naked girls, and I was like, oh, it was just reached a whole new level. And then I wanted one really badly.
But, you know, in your work, you have that painting, Dan, that painting that's really moving with the sort of Kodak rest stop. I was like, this is the best subject for a painting, these Kodak rest stops, you know, because they're so crazy. Mm-hmm. And then you have on the wall, written in pencil, I think, right, just this sort of little voice saying, like, they come, they stop, and then they never come back. You know, like this weird, you know, and it also seems very Northwest, you know, like, I just love that idea of, like, remoteness, but, like, touristy remoteness, you know, like this weird connection with, like, this, you know, this external stuff, and that's kind of idiosyncratic and really, like, owned by, it felt like it was really owned by you, like, you own this space. Other people might come and make photos, they might, you know, but, like, you're really claiming the space, and I kind of love that. I felt like that for all of you. It seems like your work, Kat, is a lot about that, too, like, I'm like behaving like an animal. I'm behaving like a person who might live in this deserted cabin.
Because I did make paintings of these places, and making films without me in them, and that felt really detached. And then in order to, you know, place myself in that history of that place, I needed to physically interact with it. And it's just something that just kind of happened.
You started by putting your hand on a van. Right.
Yeah. That was the beginning of something that started to feel right.
What was that?
Oh, it's well. Yeah.
It's well, it was the first piece of video art that I did in graduate school. It's actually not a van. It's a trailer that was just parked on the side of the road, and it was just absolutely beautiful. And I went out there with my little, you know, $200 handheld camera, and just moved my hands all around this blue streak that's on it, and it was the first thing that I felt like that's what I mean.
Like,
yeah, it goes around, and I think it's interesting because you hear the sound of the cars coming and going, so that's like linear time, but then I'm making a circle and the circular time, and it's just something clicked, and I realized, because I had been doing all of these videos of where I was just filming things and, you know, cutting them together, and but nothing felt like honest or something. It all was, you know, just looking through a lens and being detached.
That's so, the first appearance of your body.
And that was the first appearance of my body, yeah. And then I started my feet and going on hikes a lot and filming my feet going across rivers or whatever. And anyhow, enough about me.
No, that's good.
No, so cool.
One, I will say that part of the inspiration for my piece was when I lived in Japan, I went to a temple outside of Nara. And they have a thing called Kaidan Meguri, which is a spiritual exercise. You go down these stairs through a heavy velvet curtain into a pitch black corridor, and you have to feel, and you have to go, you move ahead, and you just feel. You can't see a thing. It's pitch black, pitch black, pitch black. You can detect that you're moving in an arc, and so time's really distorted because you can't see, and you're fearful, and all this. You know, hesitation. And then you get to a point, and there's a niche in the wall with the most dimly lit little golden Buddha that's only this big. Mm-hmm. And but of course, by that time, your eyes are dilated. It's like this the most brilliant thing you've ever seen. And then you have to persist into the darkness again and keep feeling. But it's exactly that thing. I mean, and the circular, your circular piece, the way you kind of go around the room in Dan's, you know, room to the way your birds fly around. I don't know. There's just overlap there.
Yeah. Well, and you go around your work.
And we're sitting.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's.
We are sitting.
Yeah, and that's. No, that's what I was setting up. It's a kind of some kind of figure eight thing to move through, and are back around to see the first piece again, and then back through to see the backside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Symmetry is always one of your friends.
Yeah. Marie, what about that piece with the stone?
That was new. as well, and it's called Forget Me Not Blossom. And the blossoms were made by volunteers in the community with the help of the education department at the museum. And they've been made by docents and school groups and all types of people. And it was interesting because when I was just starting to gather them and assemble them on site, they were intended to remember people, the civilian casualties in Iraq, which on the Iraq body count website, I think that at the turn of the year, at the new year, I think they thought that there were 80 to 90,000 documented deaths, and those are really well documented. So there's probably this whole gray area of things that haven't been documented. But so throughout the exhibition, actually, there will be the continual making of these blossoms. But one thing that was interesting for me in putting them together is, like, I had that feeling of, like, not only are we remembering somebody who's no longer here, but then also that there's a person who made each one of those in the community. So that was really, for me, kind of a special thing. And the ground has, there's seven army blankets in between the kind of colored blankets. And so for me, that's that reference to seven generations and thinking of that past, but also our future responsibilities. And I'm really interested in the relationship between sky and earth, that those two planes, that vertical space. And I'm Seneca, and our creation story has this woman named Sky Woman who falls from the sky, and she lands on what becomes Turtle Island, is supported by a motley crew of animals who help her in this new place. But that kind of space then is really important to my work, and it seems like it was a passage that I somehow wanted to reference. And there's other, I mean, I could probably, like all of us, I could go on to all these other references too, but it's like...
Was that stone there? Was that...
No, I picked that.
You put that
I picked
in there
that
too.
Stone.
Isn't that
yeah.
something?
I there picked that stone.
I sort of thought that it was there, and you iterated with it. I didn't know.
No, I picked a stone, and I didn't want to do anything to it. I wanted it to be what it was. It's interesting because it's columnar basalt. It's from eastern Washington, so I think it's interesting also how there it's kind of from a desert area, I'm sure, I don't know, there was something, I guess I wanted to have something that was sort of plinth-like, column-like, something that sort of addressed, like, the idea of what a memorial often is, or, like, marking a spot with that stone, and so that
was
sort
of... Obelisk
like, yeah, it has an obelisk. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And the blossoms almost look like they're, like, not like lichen, but they're kind of, it's organic and they're growing
like
up.
Gross.
It.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's that, the film thing,
ladder.
The line.
Yeah, the film goes, ladder thing. Yeah. It is kind of filmic, too.
I thought it was like a celluloid strip.
I had the same thing.
I kind of like that. I realized people have told me that, so it's one of those things where it's, which is interesting, though, because I think a lot of...
That's a ladder.
It is a ladder, but... It was a ladder to me, but no. Well, to me, it was sort of a ladder. I started with the idea of it as being a ladder. Yeah. But I actually think it is interesting how, like, that idea of, like, a film strip is sort of about time and memory.
Yeah,
and
each
storytelling.
Little, its frame is like a...
Yeah, and it's also, like, a way by which we see things, which is also sort of... I mean, I think everybody has that in their work, too. Mm-hmm. Like, the frame by which you experience some aspect of life. And sometimes you're pulled back from it, and sometimes you're... like brought into it, and I think everybody's work actually really does that too.
Well, there's that hilarious video of Kat trying to leave the frame.
Oh, I love that.
I thought of Buster Keaton.
I know, I had no idea he was such an actor, but it's amazing.
Diving into that. I know, these things just happen. Yeah,
but it was very intentional.
Yeah, oh, it was totally intentional. I just, for some reason, I
most
had,
of your.
Yeah, yeah. Room,
so that's
which
an
I had just, I have been reading. The Samuel Beckett play, Act Without Words, just stuck in my head for some reason. That and this Raymond Carver poem. And it was just like those two things coming together. All of my work that I did for this show kind of grew out of those two things. And I you know,
what
you
was
just
the
got
poem?
These. You know, I wish that I knew the name of it because I can't think of it right now. But he wrote it when he was in Port Angeles and he's going on a morning walk. And he, you know, basically the gist of it is that I think he says something like, But for a moment, I was really there, and I knew I was there because when I looked up, I didn't know where I was until the birds flew in the direction that I needed to be going or something like that. And and so that just kind of stuck in my head. And then for some reason, this act without words, which is this guy on the stage, and it's a desert scene, and he's thirsty, and he needs shade, and all of a sudden this tree descends, and he goes over to that tree, and then these canteens descend, but he can't ever get them, and then and they, like, every time that he reaches, they go up further, and then these flies come down and take them away, and then he tries to leave the stage, and he just keeps on getting thrown back, and so, yeah, I, you know, how do these things, like, get stuck in your head, and then you have to go out and act them out? I don't know.
But I think that's a really good place to end, because actually, there is that the I didn't know I was here, and then I found out that I was here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that's what I was saying at the beginning with the idea that these are Northwest. This is a Northwest show. I mean, it does. There is a sort of groundedness to it that I think is really. It's really moving, and. You know, I don't think I've ever gone on a podcast before and said, I really like your show. But I would like to tell everyone who's listening that I really recommend, you know, making the drive. It's really worth seeing. There's so much to see. And these artists really just did amazing work for this. So. And the Portland Art Museum. Congratulations, everybody. From me, doesn't matter what I think about still. And thanks for sitting down. This is fun.
Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Invisible. Thanks.